In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Law and Order UK. A man walks along the shore of the Thames with a metal detector. He talks on his phone.
An hour, maybe two. 43 years of marriage, it's not a lot to ask. Well, the longer we argue about it, the longer I'll be.
The middle-aged man, Arthur, lays down his metal detector and digs around in the rubble. He straightens up sharply, looking horrified. Later, police have arrived.
Old geezer who dug it up got quite a shock. He's drinking tea with four sugars in it while Uniform get his statement.
Right. Did you ever have a metal detector?
A pogo stick. The metal detector kids were the nerds.
I always fancied one, but at first Mrs. Brooks reckoned I had enough crap without going looking for it.
Detective Sergeants Matt Devlin and Ronnie Brooks.
What you got, Joy?
Male corpse, face down, wrapped in the remnants of a sheet. Decomposition's pretty much complete, mostly a skeleton. Some remains of clothing and footwear. Oh, and a Swiss watch, still ticking.
She hands the bagged watch to Matt.
Must be what set the detector off.
How long's he been here, Joy?
Rough guess, under 10 years, over two.
Any other clues as to his ID?
Nope. Even his mouth's empty, shattered round the sockets, like his teeth have been smashed out.
So we got no chance of finding out who it is?
No sign of him here. Killer knew what they were doing.
So how was he killed?
Single bullet to the back of the skull. Entry wound, just above the cervical vertebrae. There's the bullet.
Right. One shot, back of the head. Very professional. Well, it's not a crime of passion. It's an assassination.
Images of London are overlaid with shots of the show's characters in action. A caption: Law. Bradley Walsh as DS Ronnie Brooks. Jamie Bamber as DS Matt Devlin. Harriet Walter as DI Natalie Chandler. A caption: Order. Ben Daniels as James Steele. Freema Aguman as Alicia Phillips and Bill Patterson as George Castle. Law and Order UK, original series created by Dick Wolfe. Unsafe, teleplay by Chris Chibnall. Ronnie and Matt are with Natalie at the police office.
Colt 45 cartridge, that's a single. There are no links to any other shootings or crime scenes. The cartridge probably came from a Smith & Wesson gun or similar, but we are running checks to see if there's any matches or anything, OK?
And what about the body? Any joy getting a name?
Run it through missing persons, cross-match, height, age, sex, factoring in the clothes he was wearing. 39 possible matches for those missing best part of the decade.
Right, nail his ID. Your best lead is this watch. It's a classy little timepiece, that. Get it to a watchmaker, see what secrets it yields.
Castiglione watches.
Ah, this brand, they all have a code. Two letters and two digits. Now, the letters give you the month, the digit give you the year. Now, this was manufactured in June 1978.
Yeah, it's very good, sir, but we was hoping you might be able to tell us who the owner of the timepiece was.
Oh, yeah, but patience, patience. You know what happens when everything is a rush.
No.
People accept shit. You take this to the manufacturer, they have a register of the owners.
A warehouse.
There's nothing on the system. Do you know what? I bet it's still in the paper files. I'm sorry, but the person who did this job before me wasn't very good. Just bear with me.
What a lovely environment to work in.
Yeah, they've run out of space in the office next door, so they've stuck me in here. Ah, don't mind. It's my first job out of uni.
What happens when it gets cold?
I wear gloves.
The young woman goes through a file.
Ah, yes. Here it is. Your watch is registered to David Aykroyd.
At the police office.
Post-mortem boys thought you might like this. They pulled it out of your male anon's leg.
Well, give us a clue then, Gov, what is it?
It's a pin from his knee. Must have been holding the whole thing together. And there is exactly one man on the missing persons list with exactly the same form of injury.
Let me guess.
David Ackroyd?
42, matches height and clothes. Pin in his knee from a car accident, went missing Christmas Eve 1999.
Ackroyd's killer is already in prison.
What?
Luke Slade tried and convicted of Ackroyd's murder in the absence of a body. James Steele ran the case.
David Ackroyd is survived by a daughter.
Louise Ackroyd.
I was 14 when Dad disappeared. Even when they accused Slade of his murder, I still never believed it. I always thought, you know, without a body, there was still a chance.
What about your mum?
She died last year. It was cancer. Ever since Dad went, she was broken.
Louise looks down.
I got the house and the car. Yeah, here I am rattling around by myself in my parents' house. I don't want any of it. I just want them.
Must be tough.
Yeah, I mean, anniversaries and birthdays, they're the worst. You know the barrister at the CPS, James?
Oh, yeah, James Steele, yeah.
Yeah, well, every year on the anniversary he sends a card just seeing how I'm doing.
She sits with a plate of food in front of her.
So, was Dad's body where they said, under a building site?
Matt looks at Ronnie.
No. Your father was found just across the water from Canary Wharf by the dome.
But how could his body be there? I don't understand. But that doesn't make any sense.
At the police office.
She's right. That is Ackroyd's body. A big hole just opened up in the middle of this case.
James Steele got a conviction without a body. The whole case was hinged on evidence given by one of Slade's accomplices, Richie Newman. Newman said that he and Slade buried Ackroyd's body in a building site in Chelsea.
Well, then how come he gets found 7 miles away?
What's in the files on the murder weapon? Because if the bullet in David Ackroyd's skull matches the weapon that Luke Slade used, it's still workable.
No. No, because according to Richie Newman,
Slade cut Ackroyd's throat with a knife. Weapon was never found.
You pull one thread and the whole thing comes unravelled.
Find Richie Newman, he's the key.
You don't reckon CPS got it wrong, do you?
Well, don't get ahead of yourself, mate. Hindsight makes things look very simple. If I knew 9 years ago what I know now...
Yeah? What?
Well, I'd still be too stupid to do anything about it.
Thank you, Confucius.
A free newspaper.
Thank you.
Richie Newman.
Who wants to know?
The other ghost of Christmas past.
Matt shows the big guy his badge in an interview room.
Seriously, we buried him in Chelsea.
Then why couldn't you lead the police to the exact spot at the time?
It was the middle of the night, not my manner.
Richie, you also said that Slade cut Ackroyd's throat.
So?
He died of a bullet to the head.
Richie looks at Matt, shocked.
That's not what Slade told me.
You sure about that, Richie? Because even after all this time, CPS could change their mind about charging you.
Especially if they find out you've been lying.
I'm telling the truth. I wasn't there when Slade killed him. Time I got there, the body was wrapped up in a sheet. I am telling you what Slade told me. You've got to believe me. Slade did it. You've got to make sure he stays inside. If he gets out, I'll be a dead man. Promise me that ain't gonna happen.
Look at Newman's face. He's absolutely bricking it at the thought of Slade getting out.
Well, maybe because he lied.
No. I've been through those files 100 times. Slade embezzles, Ackroyd finds out and don't like it, and vanishes. Everything points to Slade being the killer. Absolutely everything.
Either way, your man Newman's not exactly a 5-star witness.
Well...
No, thanks for letting us know anyway. Bye. The dominoes are toppling, I'm afraid. Criminal Cases Review Commission has referred Luke Slade's case back to the Court of Appeal. Potential miscarriage of justice. He could go free.
Crown Prosecution Service, City of London, Wednesday, 15th of April. Matt and Ronnie bring files to James Steele.
Hey, you didn't have to bring these over yourselves.
Well, listen, we've both been through the files, we've read the statements and...
Slade did it. Weight of evidence is way too strong.
And just because he's got an appeal... doesn't mean to say he's innocent, does it, James? So, don't let him wriggle out of it.
I'll do my best. I promise.
You need anything?
You just call us here.
James smiles at Matt, who goes. James squats down in the middle of the office, which is cluttered with boxes of files. He glances round, then takes a file from a box. James and Alicia Phillips arrive in the quad of the Royal Courts of Justice. Waiting by the steps is a hard-faced middle-aged man wearing handcuffs, Luke Slade. A prison warder stands with him. Slade, wearing a smart black coat over a suit and a silk scarf, smokes a cigarette. He smiles as James walks up.
James Steele, Senior Crown Prosecutor for London. How are you?
Slade hands his cigarette butt to the warder.
Thank you, Jared. We haven't met. My loss, Luke Slade.
Alicia Phillips.
What are you doing out here?
I discovered in prison that I really like smoking. Something to thank you for. Unless I get cancer, then I'd have to sue you.
Where's your barrister?
I'm representing myself.
At the Court of Appeal?
I spent the last 8 years with time on my hands. So I studied the law.
Slade looks at James inquiringly.
How's your wife? What are you, separated or divorced?
This is a murder case. You should have a barrister. The judge can delay the case while you find someone to represent you.
Honestly, I'm fine. Thank you.
He checks a pocket watch.
Oh, there we go. Come on, Jared. Shall we?
Slade tips his head towards the court building and holds out his cuffed hands. James looks rattled. Alicia walks on up the steps and he follows her. With a carefree smile, Slade and the prison warder follow them. In court, Luke Slade's in the dock.
I thank my lords for allowing me to represent myself. As set out in my skeletal argument, my appeal is brought as new evidence has cast doubt on significant aspects of the Crown's original case.
You're referring to the discovery of Mr. Ackroyd's body?
Exactly that, my lord. In support, I'm relying upon the authority of Crown and Anderson 2005. At 98 Criminal Appeal Reports, my lords, page 207, which I'm sure you all know. In that case, both convictions were quashed when the Crown's main witness was found to have given false evidence.
Is it your submission that the Crown relied on evidence they knew to be false?
Not knowingly, my lord. But the discovery of Mr. Ackroyd's body has established that neither the cause of death nor the place of burial, as advanced in the original case, were correct. I further rely upon Mitchell and Her Majesty's Advocate, 1996, One Scottish Law Review, page 982, in which it was found on appeal that, quote, significant evidence unavailable at the original trial would have had a material bearing on the jury's determination.
Thank you, Mr. Slade. You clearly researched your territory well.
Thank you, my lord.
In his office, James watches a videotape of an old news report.
David was an adored husband and dad. Luke Slade defrauded him out of millions and then murdered him. Even now he's been convicted of David's murder. He refuses to tell us where David's body can be found. This trial has been an enormous burden.
You need sleep.
Myself and my daughter. But I'd like to record my overwhelming gratitude to the Crown Prosecution Service, and in particular, James Steele.
Oh my God, is that you?
Yep. No telling me how much younger I look.
You sure you're all right with it all?
This was my first case when I came to the CPS. It was my first prosecution. Look at me. God, I look so certain of everything. What if I was wrong, Alicia? What if the real murderer is still out there?
James, Slade is guilty. Everyone who's read the file agrees.
James picks up a file. Alicia frowns.
It's late. You need to rest.
Soon.
James smiles and looks through the file. Squatting down in front of him, Alicia looks worried. She straightens up and turns to go, but doesn't move. James glances up at her, and she smiles briefly. She goes. In court, Slade's in the dock. A bewigged James stands with the file open in front of him.
I refer my lords to the authority of Crown and Ramos 2002, in which it was found the cumulative weight of the original case outweighed doubts about a single component.
The issue is whether the Crown's case relied on perjured evidence.
Mr. Newman did not lie. He reported what Mr. Slade told him about the cause of death. If this were to render the conviction unsafe, it would reward Mr. Slade for lying to Mr. Newman.
But Mr. Newman was also wrong about the burial site, which cast doubt on his credibility as a witness.
My lord, Mr. Newman was present at the original burial. The Crown now argues that Mr. Aykroyd's corpse must have been moved shortly after its initial burial.
For what purpose?
Because Mr. Slade feared that Mr. Newman might confess what they'd done together. Therefore, the Crown now argues that rather than undermine Mr. Newman's credibility, this new discovery casts further doubt on the defendant's character.
That's your theory, Mr. Steele. Do you have any evidence to support it?
James shifts on his feet.
Not at this stage, my lord.
So this is precisely the issue that a retrial might explore.
Standing behind bars in the dock, Slade paces and sways on his feet. He looks at James, who sits frowning heavily. James sits on the steps outside playing with a Rubik's Cube puzzle. Alicia comes down the steps holding some large books. James looks up as Alicia sits beside him smiling.
They've agreed with Slade. His conviction's been overturned. They've granted him a bail.
James hangs his head.
They can't do that.
I'm sorry, James.
It's fine.
Reporters gather.
Today's not about me. Today's about David Aykroyd. I love David. He was like an older brother to me. Like everyone else, I was heartbroken by his death. Because of mistakes made by the Crown Prosecution Service, David's murderer is still walking free somewhere. I look forward to proving my innocence at my retrial.
James comes face to face with Slade, who holds out his hand. James frowns incredulously.
I forgive you, Mr. Steele.
Alicia stands watching. James walks off without shaking hands. James is with Louise Aykroyd in a graveyard.
Do you think they're together now, Mum and Dad? I mean, do you believe in that God in the afterlife?
I need evidence.
You sound like that.
I let you down at the appeal.
Standing by David Aykroyd's fresh grave, Louise looks past James.
Oh my God.
Luke Slade walks over.
What are you doing here?
It's the first thing I had to do. Pay my respects. Louise, I know this is difficult, but I wanted to say this to you. Your dad was a great man. I will make it my life's work to find his killer and to bring them to justice.
Get away from her.
James walks right up to Slade.
Too many people have failed you. I won't be one of them.
He backs away.
I mean it. I will make things right for you.
Without looking at James, Slade goes. James seethes. He turns to see Louise sobbing.
Are you okay?
Don't touch me! How is that allowed to happen? What, he killed my dad and he can just stand there and say that to me?
I'm so sorry.
Sorry's not enough. He's right. You failed me. You failed my dad.
She buries her head in her hands on a stairwell at the police office.
We have to prove the case all over again, and this case must not fail. Understand?
We need all the original signed statements.
You'll want another look at the forensic analysis. Techniques have moved on since the first trial.
And I suppose you want us to track down all the original witnesses.
Read my mind.
That's 9 years. They could be anywhere by now.
We're relying on you. I'm not having Louise Aykroyd watch her dad's killer go free.
Slade was one of them venture capitalists. I've never quite worked out what them people do anyway.
So Slade and Aykroyd, they were involved in this, what, late 90s dot-com boom?
Basically, that was their game. They was investing in internet startups, hoping one was going to become successful. They just made a shed load of bread.
So what went wrong?
What always goes wrong in deals like that? Agreed.
CZY Developments.
You and Luke Slade were an item for a while after university.
I'm nobody's item, detective.
No, of course not, sorry. You had a relationship.
On and off. In the end, I got sick of always being second on Luke's to-do list.
Did you ever stay in touch with David Aykroyd?
No. Thank you. I wish I had. I never realised, but David was the real catch. I always thought Luke was the one worth paying attention to, but David was the better man. His only weakness was he thought Luke was going to make him rich. Well, we all thought that for a while. Hello?
At the police office, Matt's at his computer.
OK, we've got two witnesses living abroad, one dead, and another couple who can hardly remember the details of their story.
If someone asked me what I was up to 9 years ago, I'm not sure I'd have the full picture.
Come on, boys, we've got to do better than this.
Yes! How's this for better? Slade's girlfriend made a statement to the original investigation about her car, which Slade used to borrow. Slade sold it for her a couple of days after Aykroyd's disappearance. The original investigation never managed to trace it, but I have.
Slade could have used the vehicle to move the body.
Maybe if we get it forensicated.
Forensicated isn't a word.
In the forensics lab.
You're like this. It's all about the dirt. Now, first off, particles of dirt we found on David Aykroyd's remains match the pedological profile of the Chelsea area.
Pedological?
Soil.
So, Newman was telling the truth. They did bury David Aykroyd in Chelsea.
Exactly.
What, so the soil's not the same at Canary Wharf?
Well, it's similar, so not identical. Chelsea is predominantly brick earth. Out east, you've got sand and gravel terraces. You see now, the girlfriend's car. Amazing assortment of specimens in that vehicle. You've got sand from two beaches, probably in Norfolk. Traces of assorted human detritus, mostly exfoliated skin and the parasites that feed on it. Stuff you might find in your mattress.
Not in my mattress.
My point being, fibre traces found in the boot match the sheet in which David Aykroyd's body was found. Mixed in with both body and sheet, particles of Chelsea soil.
Okay, so Aykroyd buried in Chelsea, dug up again, and moved across town in a car.
In a car that Slade had access to.
Well done, Teddy.
In the robing room at court, James is with George Castle.
Appeals are one thing, but the rough and tumble of a full murder trial is quite another. I don't want you going easy on it.
George, I have done this before. I'll treat him with respect, and I shan't patronise him. I don't want the jury feeling sympathetic because he's inexperienced.
You're not as daft as you look. But don't let him rattle you. You got it right in the first trial, you'll get it right now.
George, please, if you start being nice to me, I'm not going to be able to concentrate for the rest of the day.
Alicia comes in.
Richie Newman's disappeared.
How can he have?
No one's seen him for 3 days. The last charge on his credit card was a one-way plane ticket to Thailand.
Oh, beautiful. We've lost our main witness and the trial starts in what? 13 minutes.
James frowns anxiously. Crown versus Slade, day one.
My lord, I have to ask for further time before we swear the jury. We're having difficulty locating the first witness. If the court could grant an adjournment of, say, 2 days.
We keep to our dates in this court, Mr. Steele. If one of your witnesses is unavailable, you will have to make a hearsay application to read his evidence instead.
Sorry, my lord, but my retrial was granted on the basis of new evidence which contradicts Mr. Newman's statement.
The jury should be allowed to make that judgment for themselves.
Well, if I can't cross-examine Mr. Newman, how can I attack his credibility?
Mr. Slade is right. Mr. Steele, your applications both for adjournment and hearsay are refused. Unless you produce him, we shan't be hearing from your witness.
Slade sips some water and glances at James in the police office.
Where the hell is he? How can a man just disappear like that?
Newman's gone off radar. I've got uniform searching known whereabouts. We've notified ports, airports, the full shebang. There is no sign.
Then look harder.
You heard what Ronnie said. We've got people on it.
Well, in the meantime, we need to find more prosecution-friendly witnesses from Slade's past.
You thought about his cellmate?
Matt and Ronnie go to see Danny Doyle in Ashbridge Prison.
Did you enjoy sharing a cell with Luke, Danny?
Slade's got you lot on the run, honey.
What about other friends in the prison? You have any of those?
You're joking, aren't you? Used to call him the monk on the wing. Just sat there day in, day out, reading his legal books, making notes.
When he did start to talk, did he ever speak about David Aykroyd's murder?
Well, he opened up after a while.
Danny leans on the table.
You see, my problem is my memory. It's like a muscle. And in here, it gets terrible flabby. These boys wouldn't have a cure for something like that, would you?
Well, maybe a move to a classier nick, Dan. What about that? Possible early release?
I see, you're talking like that. The old memories are coming flooding back.
He smiles and winks. Elena Adani gives evidence to James.
When David found out Luke had embezzled that much money, he went ballistic. Left messages, came round to the house.
How did Mr. Slade say he was going to fix the problem?
When I asked, he just smiled. Luke could be cold and cruel. He loved to play games with people, loved to mess with people's heads. Then I found his diary. He left it open on the table one morning when he was staying at mine.
Is this the diary?
It's handed to her in a bag.
Yes.
Could you please read it for the benefit of the court?
7 a.m., breakfast with Tony. 1 p.m., lunch with Katie McCormack at Zilly's. 9 p.m., kill David.
No further questions?
James sits and Alicia smiles.
Elena. Sweetheart.
Mr. Slade.
I'm sorry, my lord. If I was so cold and cruel, why were you so upset when our relationship ended?
I'm sorry?
Didn't you send me hundreds of abusive emails?
My lord, where is this going?
I'm exploring Miss Adani's motives for lying.
Then explore them quickly, Mr. Slade.
January 23rd, I'll make you suffer, you shit. February the 4th, I hope one day you experience pain like the pain I'm going through now.
This has nothing to do with David's death.
Offered as exhibits to the court. Is this your revenge, Elena? Is this how you want to make me suffer?
James and Alicia look shocked. Danny Doyle gives evidence.
Luke said that after he'd done it, he got really nervous because he was worried that Newman might squeal if he was put under any pressure. So he moved the body out to the East End near the river. That way, if Newman did say anything, then it wouldn't matter.
James nods and sits. Slade smiles.
Oh, Danny.
He stands up.
Danny boy.
Mr. Slade, questions, not songs.
Of course, my lord, sorry. When we shared a cell together, did you ever give evidence in a court case?
Yeah, I did. I turned QE.
Why?
Thought I'd get a transfer.
And is it true you were found to have given false evidence? Lied, essentially, and were later convicted of perjury.
James stares at Danny, horrified.
What can I say, Slady? Got me there.
Alicia glances round at a fast withering George. In George's office.
Remind me, who's the qualified barrister and who's the novice?
The charging officer never logged Doyle's perjury charge on the PNC system.
I'm not losing this trial because of some administrative balls.
No, you're losing because your witnesses are an aggrieved ex-lover and a convicted perjurer. Slade's running rings around you in there.
Thanks for your support, George.
And maybe when he finds Slade innocent, I'll offer him your job.
You do that!
Both of you, stop! It was one bad day. We keep going. Together, yes?
George glares at James, then relents and turns away. James shuts his eyes briefly and wearily hangs his head. In court.
The last time I saw David Aykroyd, he was very drunk. Very, very much alive. And heading to Mexico for a holiday. I have no further questions for myself.
James stands facing Slade.
Have you ever put a note in your diary to kill anyone other than David Aykroyd?
It was a joke. I was annoyed. If I was really going to kill him, why would I write it down?
If you didn't kill David Aykroyd, how do you explain the dirt from Chelsea in the back of the car you were using?
I was buying a new build flat in Chelsea. The developer took me around the site and I changed my shoes after the visit.
Except the exact same dirt was found on the remains of Mr. Aykroyd's body. Fibers from the sheet in which Mr. Aykroyd's body was wrapped were also found in the back of that car, weren't they, Mr. Slade?
Fibers from a range of mass-produced cotton sheets sold in Debenhams. 200,000 sets sold each year. Elena had a set, didn't you, darling? And with all due respect, Mr. Steele, that kind of dirt must be present in most of southwest London. If geology and Debenhams are your best arguments, I think you may be floundering.
James's eyes dart about. He frowns and looks at the jury.
Luke Slade wants you to think he was the victim of a miscarriage of justice. The only victim in this case is David Aykroyd. Don't fall for Luke Slade's lies. Keep to the evidence and find Luke Slade guilty of David Aykroyd's murder.
First, they convicted me of cutting David Aykroyd's throat. He was killed by a bullet in the head. Then they claimed I'd buried him in Chelsea. He was found by Canary Wharf. And what do they offer as proof? Perjured evidence from a proven liar. People assume that if you're charged with a crime, you must be guilty. Assumptions like that took my life away. Please, let me live what's left of it.
He sits somberly. James thoughtfully runs his finger across his lips as they wait for the jurors. The jurors walk back in. The jowly, bewigged judge takes off his glasses. Slade stands up and leans towards James.
Good luck.
James glares at him. The last of the jurors sit and the clerk of the court stands. Slade stands.
Have you reached a verdict upon which you are all agreed?
Yes.
On the count of the murder of David Aykroyd, do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Oh.
James winces and Slade sighs with relief. James rubs his brow. George stares blankly. Slade sits. James glances back at the gallery and sees Louise Aykroyd. Distressed, she rushes out of the court. James bites his lip. James and George sit in Piccadilly Circus.
I've left Louise Aykroyd 5 messages. She's avoiding my calls. She had faith in me, George.
I still do. Always will. Whatever happens.
James looks at George inquiringly.
What does that mean?
Luke Slade has lodged a formal complaint against you, alleging a vendetta. He's arguing that it amounts to gross misconduct. He wants you out of the CPS.
James drops his head into his hand. George hands James a letter.
This letter gives you 1 week's notification of your hearing date for gross misconduct. Tell him the rest.
You're entitled to bring a friend or representative who can address the hearing and put your case.
I'll be speaking for myself.
We play by the rules, James. Discipline in a hearing carried out to the letter so that when it is dismissed as valueless bollocks, then it has no room to appeal. I'm sorry, pressure from above. I've got no choice. You should stay home pending the hearing.
James looks at Alicia, who stares at him.
Slade won't win, James.
He's done a good job so far.
Alicia rests her hand on George's chair. James looks through some post, then goes into his office and collects a box of files. Alicia watches him through a glass partition, then walks into his office to see him.
I'll see you when you get back.
He slings a bag over his shoulder and picks up the box.
Do you mean if?
James goes. On a leafy street, he stops and puts his box on a bicycle rack. He puts his bag on top of the files and looks for something in it. Slade wanders over.
Do you need a hand with that?
Are you following me?
Do you know what I admire about you, James? You won't ask me to retract the complaint.
James picks up his things and walks.
Must be so difficult, having the system you work for turn on you. But don't worry, I can look after Louise.
James drops the box.
If you go near her again, I will come for you.
A threat? This is the problem. You've lost all sense of what's right. You're an obsessive. Let it go, James.
What were his last words? This man that you loved so much. Did he beg you for mercy? Or didn't he even know it was you who shot him from behind?
How many bodies must be buried in London? This city was built on corpses. Why does this one matter so much to you?
They all matter.
You really mean that? God, how do you manage living with that conscience? Does it keep you awake? I mean, literally, does it?
No more than yours must.
We're not the same. You're an obsessed, discredited man out on his own, while I'm rehabilitated into society. For a while, you were the only person who got the better of me. Couldn't let that stand.
Slade turns to go.
This isn't finished!
He turns back.
You think my complaint won't stick? I'm not a beginner. Goodbye, James.
Slade walks away. Wretched, James's deeply lined face crumples and he wipes his hand across it. He walks over and crouches down to pick up his things. In a pub, Alicia and James lean on the bar.
James, you shouldn't be talking to him.
I didn't have a choice. He's just suddenly there.
It doesn't matter. You must not be seen with him.
None of this would have happened if Richie Newman hadn't disappeared. Why can't they find him?
There's no charges on his credit card since the day he vanished. No cash withdrawals, here or in Thailand.
Slade must have had something to do with his disappearance. He wouldn't be so stupid as to do anything himself.
Alicia's eyes dart about as she considers something.
What?
9 years in prison. He'd know plenty of people who could.
What if we dig out Slade's prison record? See if there's anything interesting on it.
When you say we?
I mean we.
In the dark office, they eat takeaway food by Alicia's desk.
If George hears I let you in, he'll go mental.
Just visiting a friend.
She looks at her computer screen.
Okay. So Slade's prison file is mostly just a record of his parole hearings. All denied. Oh, wait. It says here that Slade was involved in a complaint against a prison officer.
What do you mean involved?
Well, he filed the complaint, but it was on behalf of another prisoner.
He said to me in the street that he wasn't a beginner at this, that he'd filed complaints before. Who was it for?
Danny Doyle.
Slade's been ahead of us the whole time.
Then maybe our luck just turned.
Thank you.
What are friends for?
George in a dinner suit.
God save me from gala performances with the Home Secretary.
George, before you say anything...
I'm still at the Royal Opera House. Switch the lights off when you leave.
James and Alicia smile relieved. James visits Danny.
Should you be here?
I'm just another prison visitor, Danny. Seeing an old friend.
It's getting to you, isn't it? Does that?
You know what gets to me more? The thought of someone helping a murderer go free.
Oh, no, look, come on.
You knew Slade was aware you'd been convicted for perjury, so whatever you said in court wouldn't be admissible.
I'm not being funny, but I'm a con. I'm in prison.
We're not known for telling the truth. Took us all just water under the bridge.
James stares at him.
Not for me. I'll be at your parole board next month. And the one after that. And the one after that, reminding them of how you helped a murderer go free.
Considering, Danny lowers his eyes.
What do you want?
Where do I find Richie Newman?
Unnerved, Danny leans forward.
Look, I had nothing to do with it.
Parole board.
Freddie Martins. Slade called in a favour.
McFarlane Lane, W3. Tuesday, 19th of May. At Roadworks, Ronnie walks up to a workman holding a stop-go sign.
Hello, Squire. Looking for Freddie Martin.
Sorry, mate. Can't help you.
Really?
Matt wanders towards the rest of the workmen.
Oi, Freddie.
A bloke turns.
Ronnie!
The bloke sprints off. Matt chases after him. Ronnie casually follows. The bloke sprints round a corner only to be confronted by Ronnie.
Hello, Freddie. Yeah!
Freddie charges at Matt, who throws him against a fence and restrains him. As Ronnie walks over, Matt cuffs Freddie.
Guess what, Freddie? You don't have to say anything. But it may harm your defence if you do not mention or question something which you lately rely on in court.
At a car breaker's yard, Matt, Ronnie and a uniformed cop walk between lines of piled-up cars.
I'll tell you what, Freddie's a professional, right? This got to be the best place in London to hide a body.
They go over to the uniformed cop, who's by a red car. He opens the boot. Lying inside is a corpse.
Hello, Richie Newman.
Ronnie and Matt stand by a gateway in a park. Slade jogs up and takes a breather by the fence. Matt and Ronnie watch him as he holds onto railings. Matt walks over to Slade, who looks at him.
Morning, gents. Enjoying the day?
We're about to.
Matt smiles. Slade sits in an interview room. James walks in, puts a file on the table and sits. A policeman stands in the corner.
Seems to have been a misunderstanding.
Slade sits with his arms folded. James opens the file.
Sworn statements from Danny Doyle and Freddie Martin.
What about?
We found Richie Newman.
How is he?
You're never going to stop, are you? It ends here with you back in prison for murder.
No, it's just the end of round one.
He smiles.
I played it well, don't you think?
You think this is a game?
Everything is.
James stares at Slade in disbelief.
When the officer asks, you'll confess to the murders of Richie Newman and David Aykroyd. Give his daughter some peace. Show some honour, finally.
Slade leans towards James.
He's 8, isn't he? Ethan. Your little boy. Greatley Street. Edinburgh. Beautiful house they've got. But busy roads now. On his walk to school.
Slade grins malevolently. James keeps cool and glances up towards a CCTV camera. In a surveillance room, Ronnie and Matt are watching. James looks at Ronnie squarely in the face.
Goodbye, Mr. Slade.
Slade looks surprised as James stands.
Well, where are you going? This isn't over yet. This is far from over, Mr. Steele! Mr. Steele!
James walks through the graveyard holding a bunch of flowers. Louise Aykroyd is tending her father's grave. Wearing a sombre expression, Louise squats by the grave arranging some flowers. She looks up and sees James, who smiles at her kindly. He squats down, hands her his bunch of flowers, and gently touches her shoulder. He removes dead flowers from a pot in front of the headstone. The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious, and accordingly, any similarity between them and actual characters or events is entirely coincidental. ITFC Audio Description.